Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Let's go to the theater, The Huntington, where they are taking a fresh look at the Pulitzer Prize-winning book Common Ground, A Turbulent Decade in the Lives of Three American Families. It's by J. Anthony Lucas. Some call Common Ground the Bible of Boston, and when it was published in 1985, the Globe said, quote, "It is Boston's story, and it is tragic," end quote. Common Ground recounts the story of the 1974 decision by Judge W. Arthur Garrity to bus students across Boston in order to integrate the city's schools. What followed is famous: riots, protests, adults throwing stones at children on their way into school buildings, racial tensions that spilled over throughout the city, some parents even keeping their kids out of school. Well, now playwright Kirsten Greenidge and director Malia Bensusan are taking a fresh look at this story, told through the perspective of three Boston families, two white, one black, two in public housing, across Roxbury, the South End, and Charlestown.
Until y'all told me about it, I had no idea about this book. If it's a Bible, I'm sitting miles away at a different church.
If reporters read it and write our news, and teachers read it and teach our kids, and cops read it and walk our neighborhoods, it shapes how so many people come to learn about this city. It's children. We need to talk about this book, y'all.
That is Maurice Emmanuel Parent and Shanae Birch as members of the ensemble, and joining us now, Kirsten Greenidge and Malia Bensusan, who talk about this 74 story in 2022. Kirsten, Malia, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you so much.
It's great to have you. I was still in my head there. I stumbled a little because I was still in my head in that scene from last night. I was at the show last night, and you make so many very specific decisions about how you want to bring this story forward. I think I'll start there. Kirsten, this is a 600-page tome that sort of has defined perceptions of Boston for more than a generation. How do you tackle something like this on stage?
Well, I will say that we've had the benefit of working on it for a very long time. Malia brought me on to collaborate about, we keep saying 10 years, but it's really been 11. So, excuse me, in that span of time, we've had a lot of time to sift through the book and make some decisions about wanting to focus on the two young women, the two teenagers in the story, Cassandra Twyman and Lisa McGough, who lend their stories to Tony Lucas's book.
And they represent Roxbury and Charlestown.
Correct, yes.
Go ahead, sorry. I just wanted listeners to know that.
Oh, no, no. And so we made a decision to focus on two of the individuals who were living that experience by actually going to school each day, or, as we've found out, by doing more research and listening to Bostonians who were part of that desegregation experience, not going to school and feeling like school was not a safe place or productive place for them. So that's where it took us a few years to get to that. For a while, we had so many stories, and the playwright Naomi Zucca likes to use this analogy when talking about plays. If you have a piece of jewelry and you put all the stones on it, the jewelry or the necklace crumbles and falls, and it's not functional. So part of our job was to figure out how to make this a functional vehicle for the theater, and that was by slimming down a bit.
And I'm going to turn to Malia in just a second, but because of the analogy you just used, I'm going to stay with you, Kirsten. So what are the diamonds in this story that you wanted to pull forward?
Those young people's experiences, the juxtaposition of race and class in this city, and then how we also are revisiting this book that has meant so much to many and also been a point of contention for so many. So we wanted to be able to include that conversation in the experience of the theater piece.
So, Malia, that's really sitting in my head. I was thinking as I was watching the show last night, I was aware of this 10 or 11 year process to bring this forward, and thinking, okay, it's 2011, and one is thinking we need to revisit Common Ground. Okay, but now we're in 22, and a lot has happened in the last 2 years, and there's so much when you watch it on the stage where you think, that is today. in these last couple of years, in this last push to bring the play to the stage, how did it feel to have events around you change so much in the direction of inquisition is not quite the right word, query, right?
Inquiry.
About, yes, right. About our history.
It's true inquiry. And I think, you know, it's the Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times, that we really buckle down with a production plan for this in, say, around February of 2020. We were going to produce it in December of 2020 originally. So we've gone from a very vague developmental, you know, we say 10 years, but Kirsten and I were both doing a million other things. Kirsten is one of the most commissioned playwrights, I think, in the United States. She has so many projects she's working on. So during those 10 years, we visited it sporadically. But these last couple of years, you know, starting in February 2020, we were like, we are doing this. Let us filter through what we've learned. And then came the pandemic. And as one of our characters says, our quote unquote racial reckoning. And so it was like suddenly being infused, I don't know, you know, on steroids of information. It was drinking from fire hydrants and all those other metaphors, because there was so much happening and all our material suddenly seemed more relevant than it had seemed at any other point in our process. Wouldn't you agree, Kirsten? I mean, it was terrifying how much every time we got together to work with this company of actors, for most of these actors have been with us these last couple of years, we, and most of our work prior to this last February was on Zoom, but we would be astonished by how relevant what the characters we were creating or reimagining or capturing, what their language and what their concerns were.
Go ahead.
Yes, I mean, Amelia just used the word terrifying, and terrifying in terms of times, but also in, okay, all this information now, how do we apply it to the writing? So there could have been a little bit of terror, especially once you get a production date actually solidified and it has to go up.
So we are talking to playwright Kirsten Greenidge and director Amelia Bensusan about Common Ground Revisited, which is playing at the Huntington. I'm going to play a little sound here, so let me set this up. You do introduce some new characters into the play, and one of them is Ruth Batson, the chairwoman of the Education Committee of the NAACP, who, by the way, in a memoir later called Lucas's book Common Ground, or called Lucas, a faulty historian. And I want to play a little sound of the character Ruth Batson talking with Louise Day Hicks, who was former head of the Boston School Committee, was in the U.S. House, ran for mayor of Boston. She was closely associated with the anti-busing movement, and as you note in the play, was a bit of a Rorschach test for both sides at the time. Here's that sound.
I came up going to meetings with my mother, Marcus Garvey, Africa for Africans. So from a very early age, I heard and knew about the struggle for more. This is the United States of America, and Boston is a wonderful place to grow up. I am not swayed by this business of Boston being such a wonderful place to grow up. There are flaws in this cradle of liberty.
That's not really in here.
There's more than one book.
Okay, so just quickly, L. Borders there is Ruth Batson, Carrie MacDonald is Louise Day Hicks, and that was also Omar Robinson, who's in the ensemble. I want to ask the two of you how important it was to be a white woman and a woman of color collaborating on this story that is about the racial history and racial tensions of our time. Amelia.
Oh, you know, as you ask that question, I'm filled with a sense of awe and gratitude for our collaboration. We first collaborated, Kirsten and I, and we were matched by the Huntington Theater. So it is to that institution's credit that we've been working together all these years on Kirsten's amazing play, The Luck of the Irish. And what struck me when we were working on The Luck of the Irish, which is Kirsten's play that dealt with some of the issues around redlining and race in Boston around home buying. But I would be in rehearsal rooms with Kirsten, where half the room was Black, Black presenting, and half the room is white presenting. We all have different backgrounds. But to be in a room where conversations around race and city living and education are spoken of honestly and candidly with all our perspectives from our various backgrounds around race and socioeconomic class and religion, it's really been an extraordinary privilege to be in these rooms and sharing space with Kirsten as we create these works.
And how about for you, Kirsten, and being mindful that you are creating the dialogue and the stories for white families and Black families at a highly racially charged time?
First of all, I am always grateful to work with Melia, grateful and joyful, even though this topic is really difficult. And I often find myself looking to her expertise in terms of how to bring the work into the room off the page, which she does really, really well. I think that it has been important to have a team that is biracial on this project to be able to enter into these conversations and possibly go places where where cast members might be afraid to go if there was just one of us at the helm. And I would say that I don't want to speak for Melia about
you can you always can.
She presents. She is a Latina. A white presenting Latina woman, and I value that experience and her experience and Jewish as well. And so I value all of her multiplicity of experiences as we sit in the rehearsal room day after day. It is wonderful to have her experience and to see how our experiences meld together, which I think is important in any collaboration, but particularly in this one.
So I want to play a little sound here from Act Two of the play. And this is looking at the Charlestown family and Charlestown culture at the time. Here it is.
Baked into the DNA, rooted under the pavement of Charlestown, is this idea of community, and that community is all. I mean, the individual as well.
Growing up, you were a townie. Guess what that meant? Automatically, you were tough, you were Irish, you were a Democrat, and you were Catholic. In that order. And you were damn proud of it. You were very proud. That was your identity.
So Michael Kay there is part of the ensemble. Amanda Collins is Alice McGough, the matriarch of the family who leads some anti-busing protests in Charlestown. One of the things that's interesting about watching this story unfold on stage is that many of the people you're talking about are still alive. And these are stories about communities and choices that families and individuals made who can then give you feedback, right?
Yes.
People who grew up in these neighborhoods who lived this as their own experience. And I know sometimes you've gotten pushback. How have you thought about that, Melia? And what have you done about that, Kirsten? Melia?
Well, you know, specifically, if I can just, I know you're asking about the families themselves, and happy to address that as well.
But also people from these neighborhoods.
Well, so that's what I wanted to speak to. The clip you chose is so wonderful because what happened to us after a matinee this past weekend, right, because we're in previews, which means Kirsten and I are in the theater every day making changes, before the performance and then giving notes after the performance. So we're in the theater and recognizable. We'd been doing some pre-show speeches. And so a woman and a friend of hers came up to us. We were sitting in the back and said with a great Charlestown accent, I was one of those Charlestown moms. And here is something you are not taking into account. And she told us a story of her son when he was a third grader and was bused across town from Charlestown. And the anecdote she told us about his experience and her feelings about busing because of her children actually made it into the next performance. So the conversations that we're having with this city, with its residents, with the people who have been through this and with people who are just learning about it, those conversations are to paraphrase Kirsten here, are part of now the DNA of this show.
And Kirsten, it's a living, breathing show. I was struck by the fact that last night you both came out on stage before the production, said this was essentially a trial run. People had pages sometimes on stage that they were reading because you were rewriting as you went. Is that still happening? And are those constant rewrites an attempt at fidelity or just your vision changing? Tell me about that.
I think first and foremost, it is definitely part of the new play process, particularly part of my process. If you have the rehearsal time and the ability and to fix things, my philosophy is one should do that, is theater is a living experience. I feel a tremendous amount of onus to try to make sure that this piece is not doing any more harm than living through Boston's desegregation in the 70s already has done. Trying to honor the three families, knowing that it must be incredibly hard to see your life rendered on stage in this way, or on film as it was in the several decades ago, or in the book where Tony Lucas is making decisions about what he wants to put in the book and what he might not be able to, in terms of the story he's telling, and also in terms of this book probably could have easily been 4,000 pages, having access to all of his records and taking. There's a lot more information that he called. But I do want to make sure that if someone has lived in this city or lived through desegregation in this city, that they see a little bit of themselves. I cannot promise that I can tell every story fully and wholly, as it is a 2-hour play. And also I'm not living those people's experiences, but it's very important to me that someone who knows the city and or knows what we call busing, desegregation, can say, I saw the play and part of it spoke to me. I know not all of it will speak to everybody. So my going back in there and rewriting is part of that. And also, we are living during a pandemic, and theater during a pandemic is really, really difficult.
Yeah.
So we are also dealing with a lot of COVID cases during our process, where we are also needing to fix things that we weren't able to get to a few weeks ago.
All right, that is Kirsten Greenidge and Melia Bensusan, playwright and director of the new play Common Ground Revisited. It's at the Huntington's. It is at the Huntington until June 26th. Kirsten, Melia, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.